This is Rafflebix After Hours.
Oh, hello! Whoever you are, wherever you are, and thank you for being here, listening to Rack Addicts After Hours, a music and technology podcast. This is episode 133. Oh yeah, I got it right without thinking of it beforehand. Incredible. Wherever you are, if it's in the UK, especially if it's in the UK, we hope you haven't melted and you've hydrated yourself sufficiently, because we don't know what to do with this rather toasty weather. 41.9 degrees, I think, was somewhere, or 40.9. It's a roasty one, and we're making it work. You've heard my voice. I'm Ben. Pete is here, as always. What have you been doing, actually, in the, 4 days or something since we last saw each other?
I have been doing some newt wrangling.
Newt wrangling. Oh, is there pond action over at Rack Addicts Towers?
There certainly is.
Ah, wonderful. I do like a good newt. Are they, is it great crested we have over here?
Well, they are the really rare ones, the great crested ones, the ones that are protected, and you should alert the authorities if you see them or something like that.
Yeah, because they're wanted criminals.
These ones are just the common newt.
Lovely. And still cool that you don't see them very often.
No, they are most probably quite rare in themselves. And we are moving some of the population from one pond in London to a pond in Surrey.
Gotcha. Why?
Well, it's all part of the process. I'm helping someone move, and they're moving out of London, and they are not sure whether the new owners of the property are going to keep the pond. They may rid of it, so that jeopardizes the newts. So we want to ensure that the colony survives. So
that is wonderful.
We're moving it to my pond, hence discussing the...
Oh, yeah, the great mats of weeds and such that you had to remove a while ago.
Which, yeah, that was, 2-3 months ago or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we prepared it and we...
For the great newt exodus.
Repopulated the pond with all sorts of oxygenating plants and so forth. There's no pump system. There used to be, but it's just I suppose you call it a passive pond.
I prefer active ponds. I think they sound better.
Now it's prepped. We were moving them. But I did go on a strange journey. I had to collect my daughter from Stansted Airport in the middle of the night.
Right.
Now, for those who are not familiar with the airport, or those of our listeners who are outside the UK and most probably completely oblivious to where anything is in the UK, possibly... Stansted is about, I want to say, 30 miles north of London.
Yep.
And
it counts as a London airport for some reason.
Yep. And I live approximately 30 miles south of London.
Quite a schlep.
So in the middle of the night, I proceeded to Stansted Airport with two large buckets in the front footwell of my car.
Oh, yeah.
Covered in cling film.
Yep.
To stop water and newts slurping all over the place. And collected my daughter and arrived at something like 3 a.m. in the morning back at Rack Addicts Towers and immediately dispatched the newts from the buckets into the pond rather than letting them get unpleasant in the sort of overwarm buckets, because of the...
Of course.
Generally, it was another balmy evening, let's put it that way.
At least it was the evening for the travel rather than midday.
Yes, but the travel was bad enough because I had to proceed from South London, south of the Thames, across...
You actually went through London for this one.
Yeah, I went through London in the middle of the night. And
Carrying newts.
Yeah, that was an experience.
Just imagine if the police stopped you for any reason.
Yeah.
You have to explain your buckets of probably rare newts.
What have you got in the bucket, sir? I have newts, officer.
Brilliant. Well, I applaud your newt rescue. That's brilliant.
But they've gone into the pond and not been seen since. So I would imagine it's quite deep in the respect. I think it goes to about 2 feet at the deepest. So I suspect they've gone deep, especially in this repressive heat. They are relatively safe from the prying eyes of birds or any other predators that might want to dine on them. And I'll just see how hopefully they will breed again next year and the population will continue.
Excellent stuff. Any more apart from your Newt Escapade.
Been continuing with the Hydrosynth Deluxe.
Nice.
Still really auditing it in very thorough detail. That's typically what I do with any new instrument that I purchase, and I'm sure most people would do similar. You get it powered up, and one of the first things you do is you go through all the presets.
Yeah.
Very carefully audit them, and I tend to take notes as well, especially if it's a very... You know, typically modern synths that have presets have lots of presets, potentially,
quite,
you know,
a big,
500,
huge amount,
even
yes.
1,000. And you go, wow, what was that brilliant sound? I can't quite remember what patch number it was. So
yeah.
I've learned to take notes as I go.
Awesome. Do you test out things like, ooh, this is the kind of thing I expect to want to do with MIDI. Does it work and is it easy?
I haven't quite got to that stage. I need to get to the point, as I said last week, I can't see part of the control surface. It's been obscured by a DeepMind 12. So I need to have it that I can...
World problems.
Yes, exactly. So I need to have it fully in front of me, the full control surface.
Fully
and the manual in one hand, and I can really dig in deep and really understand the MIDI connectivity side. Something I've got to do quite soon, and I suspect I'll be diving into the tables of CC messages and working out what needs to happen. I had a little bit of a tussle with the Summit, I seem to remember, when I did the same process. In multi-timbral mode, it was slightly difficult to get the two different patches operating in various configurations. So we'll see what happens with the Hydrosynth. Also, I bought a new pedal train case.
Ah, bigger, smaller?
It's smaller.
Mm.
By
still flight cased?
Yeah, fully flight cased.
Yes.
It is, I can't even remember what model it is.
They don't have very exciting names.
But it's about, I don't know, 80 centimetres wide, maybe a couple of feet, whatever, about yay big.
Yeah.
So, yes, so I'm going to build up another.
Another in addition or a reimagining of the first?
No, another in addition.
Aha.
And then somehow mind meld it with the original or the first one. So I'm going to have two pedal train flight case setups that unify and as one kind of monster groove box.
Excellent. What's the plan for this new one in the hardware department?
I am not sure. I just grabbed it because it was a very good deal.
Aha. Was it a used B-stock or something, or what was the situation?
Someone traded it in.
Ah, gotcha.
And it looked like it had hardly been used.
Perfect.
And I grabbed it.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Here's a question for you. And actually, this is the same question for Ian, who's been on the podcast before. He just moved from a system which was two of the dope for flight casey things, you know, the 9U 84HP, the classic flight case looking ones.
Yeah.
He's migrated from two of those into an MDLR 4-row by... Actually, he didn't know off the top of his head. It might be about 126 HP.
Okay.
So it's a chunk.
Yeah.
But it's a big square, which ergonomically can be nice just sat vertically, but... More likely, in a standing situation, you'd want to incline it a bit so you have full arm access. Because it's so big, quite difficult to think about what stand you might use. But those pedal trains are going to be similar since they're just large things, and the ModCaf tables are very low. What's the plan, Stan?
The plan would be to take the pedal trains out of their flight cases and put them on top of their flight cases.
Gotcha.
So that would give me at least...
And they have their angle built in as a pedal board, don't
they? Yeah, so that would give me a 10-inch rise.
Yep.
How many centimetres of that, I can't think.
Don't know, but it's definitely an improvement over the normal ModCaf height.
I'm thinking very imperial today rather than metric.
Yeah.
So I don't know, what, 15 centimetres?
Something like that.
I'm doing conversion. Anyway... Yeah, so it would give me that extra bit of height.
Yeah.
And also they're designed, as you say, you've got the pedal trains themselves, which are on an angle, which also raise everything up. All in all, you know, possibly another foot in height.
Too bad.
Yeah, so that's going to help. And they're designed to use horizontally.
Yes, gotcha.
It's not quite the same as a modular system where you need to get right in with your fingers and get fingers between all the patch cables and all that.
Yeah,
because everything is...
Bigger and more open to use.
And it's very much... synchronized, so it's start and maybe some twiddle, some filters, but not much else. You know, most of it is going to be wrapped up in the transitions.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the effects process are all MIDI controlled, everything will just move as the patches change.
Awesome. Lovely stuff. Well, we shall be updating our audience, of course, on the development of Pedalboard 2.
Yeah, certainly. I will inform everybody as I design and build it. At this stage, I've got no real distinct thoughts in my head. I just thought I'd better grab this while it's going because it was, as I say, a very good deal.
Well, aside from trying to keep cool, school, my week has involved a little bit of a disappointment and a frustration. So, listeners may remember that I was tackling some progressive metal tunes on the guitar. And I brought the guitar into the office, so in between editing stints, I might have a bit of a noodle, keep the fingers fresh. And all of a sudden, I had a huge increase in the noise floor. And with a high-gain amplifier, that tends to end in disaster and awful sounds and noises. And, yes, my troubleshooting has included swapping to a different interface. That was a few different Scarlett options, an 18i20 just around the corner. Of course, all of the cable options, guitar cable, USB cables for the interfaces. Alas, the problem seems to lie within the electronics of the guitar itself. And that's rather scary. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but there is some weirdness in the electronics of my instrument. So, in a bid to find the ultimate in versatility, I had a custom wiring job done, which I managed to scare off three different guitar techs with. Let me illustrate. It is an HSH pickup configuration. That means humbucker, single humbucker, so two double row pickup things on the neck end and the bridge end, and a single coil in the middle. You'd recognize it if you saw it, most likely. And there is a five-way pickup selector. That's how it came from the factory. A volume, a tone, and a five-way pickup selector. That gives you, in the position nearest the neck, a full humbucker. The next position will be a portion of the neck and the middle pickup. In the middle position, it will most likely give you the middle pickup on its own. In the next position, it will be a portion of the bridge and the middle. And in the last position, it will just be the bridge. That will be full-on metal mode there. I wanted to increase my tonal options and access the two coils of both humbuckers separately. And what I did was ask for a two-way toggle switch to be implemented, which meant I'd have those tones I just illustrated, but when I flicked the toggle switch, I could go back through and have just the single coils of the pickups on their own and different combinations in between. And it works perfectly. I did manage to find somebody to do it. PCJ Customs was excellent, and I asked him to do the thing. He went, yep, and did it perfectly. And also added a very nice tone capacitor in there, and it sounds amazing. But the problem with all of this is, I don't know how pickup wiring works, and I especially have no idea how this particular custom wiring works. So the troubleshooting will probably be fraught. I can probably check the connections around the output jack and see if there's anything obviously wrong visually. But beyond that, I think I might be a bit stuffed. And given I don't have much longer to fix this problem before the ModCaf performance, it's getting a bit dicey. So I will update you, see if I can fix this before it's too late.
So are you doing the performance on the Sunday pub?
That is the plan.
Ooh.
That is the plan.
That'd be interesting.
I hope I can fix it myself, because I highly doubt I can find a guitar tech in time.
Have you cracked it open yet?
No. It's on the to-do list, but I've been very busy. In the evenings.
I would advocate looking as quickly as possible. There might be something obvious in there.
So I hope it's something to do with grounding or the output jack, because I will be able to fix those. Other than that, we are sat next to my cycling machine. My bike is here, and there is an upgrade that I made to it just the other day, which is quite interesting. It is an oval chainring. For those non-bikey people, that will be the cog at the front, the one that you pedal around with, and you would normally expect them to be circular, but this one isn't. It'll be quite difficult for Pete to see, but he is looking over. So, the idea behind this is when you are in the least powerful portion of your pedal stroke, i.e. your feet are kind of at the top and bottom, where you can't really get much power into the pedals that way. You are in an easier gear, and when your feet are in sort of the horizontal position where you can get lots of power through, you're in a higher gear. So it evens out the power delivery from your legs. And I've no idea if it actually makes me more efficient or harnesses more of the power of my logs. Yes, I said that intentionally, my logs instead of my legs. It certainly feels weird. But it's kind of cool.
And you can feel it.
Yeah, you can feel it doing something. I don't necessarily feel like I have more power or something, but you can really feel the resistance
as
change.
You're going around. It's it's difficult. Oh no, it's got easier. Oh, it's difficult again.
Not quite that extreme, but for example, let's say you stop at a traffic light. What I tend to do is, I clip in, so I unclip one foot. Put that. This is normally my left foot. Put that on the floor, and then I'll have my right foot still clipped in, and I'll move my pedal into kind of the forward and up a bit kind of portion. So, you know, you stand on that paddle, that kind of kicks you forward a bit while you stick your other foot on the pedal and then you keep going.
Yes.
While you sort of, that first moment where you stand up just on your right foot and your body is sort of sinking and the pedal's going round, you feel yourself sinking at different rates. It's bizarre, but it's cool. And it has two fewer teeth than the old one, so I managed to get up that very steep hill in the MOD areas round here quite a lot easier than I expected.
So is that the ranges you're coming across?
Yes.
Or what, the one that sort of snakes quite...
The big old up and down bit on the road. I have done the off-road bits around there. They're
so
very fun.
You climb quite a snaky road,
yep.
It kind of plateaus for a bit and then it snakes down again.
That's the chap.
Yeah, that's pretty lethal, that road, especially in winter.
I don't plan to go near it in winter. It's quite scary.
I've seen snow up there when there's not snow anywhere else.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's quite a mountain.
Well, it's not particularly high, but it just catches the weather for some reason.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that they've restricted the speed to maximum of 40 on the top, but it's 30 up the sides of the hills.
That it is.
It used to be a free-for-all. There was no speed limits, and you always drove past and saw cars that are...
Yeah, in the ditches. A little bits of police tape
around. And police incident paraphernalia. Yeah.
It's certainly fun on the downs, because you do go quite fast. It's a good laugh, that one.
Yeah, that goes over to Ashvale.
I believe so. I do remember those signposts.
Know it very well.
On those kind of bits, I go, ooh... Part of that might be how I drive to Pete's or something when I'm cycling along and stuff.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I have to say, I'm very surprised that you are tackling cycling in this weather.
It really wasn't that bad this morning. I think that going home is going to be the real
test of your metal.
We'll see. So, Pete asks, you absolute madman, why are you cycling in this stupid heat? Well, apart from trying to save money on petrol because it's very expensive at the moment, I have realised and remembered on two different fronts just how fit I was once. When I were a wee lad at school, I wasn't of a lad anyway. So, what's this going to be? 17, 18, I was playing squash 6 days a week, doing a bit of swimming as well. And I think this was in the last year of school. Every year group, in their PE classes, their physical education lessons, we all did fitness tests, which involved, I think, bleep tests, grip strength things, I think we might have done some FTP tests. That's a functional threshold power, and I don't know what that means, other than it involves cycling a lot on a stationary bike, and it's not much fun. Do you know what a bleep test is, by the way?
Yeah, it's one of those ones that you run backwards and forwards.
Yeah, absolute misery. So everybody in the school did these, and I came out in the top kind of three of the entire school, which was, for an absolute loser with not many friends at all, who hung around with the nerds, and actually I was sort of a sports scholar and things, I think I was quite proud of that, and let it all go over the university period, and the dominoes piled on, of course. But I came across a video of myself playing in the National Squash Centre in Manchester on an all-glass show court. Came across that video while I was backing up some files, and I remembered how good I felt and how confident I was in that sort of ability. And it is coming back to me now with squash, but I'm driven to pursue unrealistic fitness again. So hence the cycling, 21 miles today and 21 miles back, and trying to do that a lot.
I can tell you what it actually was, though, mostly, or a lot of what it was, called being young.
Yeah.
Young and fit.
Young and fit. That was a good time. But I think, what's most exciting to me these days about playing squash is that really driven to keep doing it and improve is quite a novelty. It hasn't happened for many a year to me, so I just want to grab that and keep a hold of it, lest I not really do anything ever, been doing.
It's not a bad thing, as long as you just don't overdo it. People can get excessive with their exercises and push it far beyond
indeed
any beneficial input that it might be having on you.
Yeah, even before injuries start happening as
Yeah,
well.
Certainly.
We'll see how it goes. Right, there is some news to tackle, and by some, I mean one. Yes, one whole news. Let us news the news. On a recent live stream, Make Noise have announced the Stereo Prismatic Oscillator, which is the XPO, not the SPO.
I saw the announcement that they were going to be making an announcement, but
yes,
I didn't
indeed.
See the announcement.
The announcement has happened. This bad boy, as they say, is stereo indeed. Analog, voltage controlled, of course, designed, this is the bump from the website, they say, designed for generating sine waves, triangle waves, sawtooth and spike waves, sub-octaves, stereo timbre modulations, including pulse width modulation and wave folding, oscillator sync, linear FM, and more in the analog domain. Designed to complement QPass, their stereo filter from a while ago, and it certainly sounds stereo. So, Tony Rolando, that's the guy. That's the guy. So I think he was on the live stream. Yes, indeed. The Speckaroonies, it's an 18 HP chunk, and you have 11, that's 11, simultaneous outputs. Five of them are mono, and there are three stereo pairs. Let's have a look at these.
Why so many outputs? Okay. Are they individual for each waveform?
So the five monos are sine, triangle, sawtooth, I guess that's a spike wave, it's a very narrow peak, and a thing. It looks like an extended hashtag or pound sign. I do not know what that is. We have PWM stereo output, one that appears to morph between triangly, sawtoothy, sine wavy, I don't know, and then one with some peaks and stuff. I don't know. I didn't have the time to sit through a two-hour live stream on the subject, but the sounds weren't inspiring enough for me to really pay that much attention. I would need to wait for our favourite classics, our Div Kids, and our Loop Ops, and who else do we like? Andrew Huang might make something quite interesting.
Yeah.
He tends to be less in-depth and more about the fun and the music, which is cool. Either way, you have two volt per octave inputs, so I don't know, that you can control the left and right, in terms of pitch at least, separately, but you can definitely use those for transposition, melody, stacking, or super rich FM, should you desire. You have separate modulation inputs for the left and right, and it can get quite spready, whatever that means.
Well, I imagine that's the stereo width.
Spready. Designed to pair well with QPass, Mimeophon, and the X-Pan.
Yeah, you'd have a stereo signal path all the way through.
Yeah, so all of the stereo options are also available as mono from just the left output.
Sounds like it could be interesting, as long as you can perform or record in stereo.
Of course, yes. I don't want to put Make Noise's live stream down, but it wasn't that good, I'll be honest. Let's have a gripe, shall we? If you're demonstrating a product, a musical product, and DivKid does this very, very well, you want to have inspiring musical examples to show off, because obviously most of the people involved with modular will be nerdier than most musicians to a certain technical extent, I assume. Sure, we'll be fine listening to the specs and quite strange bleep bloopy noises to demonstrate what it can do. But you've got to try and excite people about your products. So make a track with it. Make some crazy examples. This is why the beginning of DivKid videos are so good, because he'll show all of his patches in quick succession. They'll all be musical and interesting and exciting. Ooh, there was a lot to wade through in that Make Noise one. You skip right to the end where they're actually sort of properly demoing the thing, and it just didn't sound interesting. There was an obvious awesome stereo-ness to it, though. Obviously, in the demo, they paired it with QPass, but I'm going to wait and see. I'm going to wait and see on this one. Of course, there are hundreds of dual oscillators that you could go for, or just pick two of your favourite oscillators if you want some stereo stuff. There's some cool stereo processing options from the likes of Warng and others. How would you go stereo if you wanted, in the context of I've got a melody part or a bass part, how would you make those stereo?
And generally it would be the signal path after it's come out the effects processor, because most of the modular effects processors I have are stereo. So even if you've only got a mono signal going in, you can get a stereo signal coming out, pretty much like most synths. Mm-hmm. Being mono internally, there's only a very few, I can only think of one, that it's actually internally stereo, which is the UDO Super 6.
Of course, yes. So that's your first call, is you'd go for effectonizing it into stereo.
Yeah, typically.
I guess it is more cost effective than buying two of everything.
I'm sort of interested in this particular unit. I've already got the Mimeophone.
Yes, indeed.
So, and I was contemplating getting a Q-Pass.
Yeah, because there was there's probably an episode of that, the great Pete stereo choice kind of area, because there was the Moon Phase.
Yes.
You had that.
Yes,
you?
I still have it.
Yeah, but that it got booted out, I think.
Yeah, it's not in the live system.
Yeah. And yeah, we were talking about all of that kind of stuff, weren't we? Yeah.
Oh.
Ooh. Maybe it'll be back on the list. Yes. So we'll wait. We'll wait and see. And there we go. That's the news. Cool. Well, of course, we must bring our podcast to an end. Our final section, as always, is the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. And also, it's sometimes called, what's Pete found on YouTube this time? Well, what is it going to be, Pete?
Right, this is one I was expecting to tell everyone about a few weeks ago, and basically I forgot.
How could you?
It's come back to my attention, so I thought it's appropriate to talk about it today. This particular YouTube channel is called, all one word, Alpha Phoenix.
Gotcha.
And the gentleman, whose name is Brian, he is a PhD in material sciences.
Cool.
And he seems to have access to some really cool equipment. I mean, really cool equipment.
Yeah.
So I assume that it's something to do with his work or PhD activities. And so he does all sorts of experimentation and proffers these questions and then proceeds to potentially try to answer them, I would imagine. So some of the titles for the videos that he's got include things like, are solid objects really solid?
That is an interesting question. Urban legend or potentially science fact that I don't know the answer to is supposedly glass is actually a liquid. Don't know about that one, but that seems to float around.
Well, it does flow, doesn't it? You see that with old glass.
Apparently.
It sort of flows, so I think it's not in a fully, put it this way, I don't think the molecules are fully bonded, if that's the right terminology. Yeah. Anyway, so some of the other ones, how to predict random numbers, and what else we got there? Ditch the DSLR, the 200-year-old science of my new favourite camera.
Interesting.
So I don't know whether that's a sort of monster pinhole camera or something like that, but it's old school, really analogue photography there. And, you know, so other ones, I went to a Delta 4 heavy launch. So obviously
I don't know what that is.
Well, the Delta 4 is that one of Elon Musk's?
I don't know. Without Luke here, I've completely lost track of SpaceX. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I think it's a SpaceX rocket, isn't it? Delta series. There's another one, growing giant snowflakes, time lapse. Cool. So lots of things. And he seems to have access to things like electron microscopes, you know, just happens to have them to hand.
Just in the garage or something.
Yeah, I think this is either at the university that he works at or the Science Institute or wherever. He doesn't go into details about that side of things, but yeah, it's a really interesting, you know, obviously geeky science experiment explanation type of YouTube channel. So that is my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel Alpha Phoenix.
Wonderful stuff. Mine will be on YouTube as well. If you are prog rock fans, you may well know the band Porcupine Tree, which is Stephen Wilson as the kind of head man. We've got Gavin Harrison on the drums, and I've forgotten the other band members' names. I'm very sorry. But there's a new album, and there are a couple of live studio videos in Air Studios. Don't know if the album's going to be for me yet, but they are very good videos to be watching. Oh, I just love Gavin Harrison on the drums. But there we go. Porcupine Tree. There are live studio videos. One is called Of the New Day. I think that was my favourite of the two that are currently available. Go and check them out if you like prog rock. Thank you so much for tuning in to this podcast. We hope you come back and we hope you enjoy. Farewell.